Great. We may have some more people joining us, but one of the announcements I'd like to make before we get started, well, for some of the new people that are just joining, you may have gotten an announcement from our listserv. We have a listserv that GLOW maintains, and it's quite a wide distribution. And then we have our PLC participant list. And you may have gotten something, some of you have probably gotten from both, and I apologize for that, but what we like to do is have a broad audience, but when someone comes on, in order to get post-session notes as a PLC participant, you need to email me your contact information, and I'll just, that's msenew@aol.com, and I'll repeat that. Someone just joined?
Yes, Janice Tosto from St. Nick's Alliance.
Oh, hi, Janice. So if you don't get post-session notes, you should be getting post-session notes. We just summarize everything that's on the call. We've got about 200 people on a participant list, and we've got all alumni, and they like to read the notes. Just email me your contact information. And I'll make sure that you're on that list. You may still get notices from the listserv, but you'll continue to get the post-session notes. So that's msenew@aol.com, and I'll make sure you're on the list. And the other side of that is if you're tired of listening to these calls and you don't want to get the post-session notes, just say remove, and we'll take you off the list. So we always start out with we are HMTRI, for those that are new. We work with, under cooperative agreement with EPA. We're not EPA. We have worked with EPA since the beginning of this program under a separate grant. It's a cooperative agreement. And our mission really is to help communities with their program plans and decide if they want to start a job training program. Sometimes after working with us or listening to the calls or attending our meetings, they might decide we're not ready for it this year, but maybe next year or maybe not ever. Once people get job training programs.
North Star.
Hey, North Star.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Once people get a grant, we do a lot of networking and mentoring among ourselves so that those who have not gotten a grant yet continue to come to the calls and the meetings, and we try to mentor them to get them into the fold. And those who have grants, we like to exchange ideas, network, and also use our grantees that we have many here as mentors and presenters to help those that are just starting programs get their program off to a good start and learn from mistakes and positives of the people who have grants. So that's what we do, kind of a facilitator. The nice thing about what we do is we're independent of EPA, and we don't speak for them, but at the same time we could do things they can't do and say. For example, GLOW, do you want to do news from Washington first?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Actually, I did talk to headquarters this morning, and they said that the guidelines for the next RFP, for the next job training competition, are under review now, and that they hope that they'll be issued in the next few weeks. So it sounds like their goal of mid-November, it might be a little past that. The other thing they wanted me to remind everybody to remember to report your numbers and success stories and everything else. They need that to keep this program running.
Those are for those of you who are grantees. We had two people join or three or four. Could you announce yourself? Do we know where you're from?
Bruce. Sorry.
Myesha Cannon from Mott Community College.
Okay. Anyone else?
Jewel Brown and staff from North Star in Hartford, Connecticut.
Great.
Randy Flood, Green Valley Alliance.
Hey, Randy.
Hey.
Good. I'll announce later again, if you don't get post-session notes, email your contact information to me. You may have gotten a listserv note, but it's msenew@aol.com, and I'll make sure you're on our participant list. If you're getting post-session notes, then you're good. We won't take you off. Go ahead.
M-S what?
M-S-E-N-E-W. msenew@aol.com. My name is Michael Senyu. That's S like Sam rather than S like Frank. So msenew@aol.com. And we'll make sure that you may, if you got a notice, you may get another listserv notice the next time, but we want to make sure that people get post-session notes, too, if they want them. Well, this is going to be an interesting situation with Joe and the release. What I was beginning to say was EPA regional reps, and I'm going to put the regional reps in the post-session notes. They can give you personal help about your particular community and your grant up until when the RFP is issued. And at that point, they can only talk in generalities about the grant and about in a public forum. So they can't give you individualized help. Up until then, they could give you some help, perhaps who you may want to contact in your neighborhood or community. They can do those things until the RFP comes out, and it's like a gauntlet. Now, we can talk any way we want up until the grant. So the advantage we're going to have is we can talk about issues and people's particular problems. And we're going to be doing, this is the ninth call of 10 of this cycle. We're going to be starting a new cycle probably about when the grant RFP comes out. And we'll be, for those of you who are either re-upping or don't have a grant, we're going to be kind of, it's not a grant prep, but we're going to be talking about sustainable job training programs. And those of you who have grants, we really need you to help us mentor those other people. And we're going to be exchanging ideas of how to improve our job training programs at the same time. But I would encourage those in the next cycle that we'll be starting, and it'll be almost continuous. Our next meeting will be on the 19th of November, and by that time the RFP will probably be out, and we'll continue with the next one. Joe wants us to announce that he's going to have some overviews of the guidelines, this is going to be interesting, because on November 12th, which is next Wednesday, and on December 4th, he's going to have a webinar, an Adobe webinar, and I'll put that in the contact information, in the post-session notes, from 2 to 4 p.m. And usually he has a PowerPoint that you could download, and he goes over the RFP. So it'll be interesting how he's going to handle that. He may have to, he obviously knows what's in it, but maybe he has to caveat it by saying, well, until it's out, this is just a guideline. So, but I'll put the dates and the time, and I would encourage everyone to go to one of these. There's a good chance that December 4th will be similar to the November 12th, but it's good to go to the November 12th one if you can next week, and it'll give you a good idea of where to start. So there are a lot of things coming up, and we'll try to, again, put them in post-session notes. Another thing Joe would like us to talk about, and this is far in the distance, but we need to talk about it, is the National Brownfields Conference. It's once every 18 months or so, and it's going to be next September, September 2 to 4 in Chicago. And the reason they're announcing it so early, they really like to plan way ahead of time. And for good reason, there's about 4,000 people that attend. But they had a deadline for calls for ideas, abstracts of session, and they've extended that to December 8th. We've submitted one for a roundtable, so I'm hoping these have to be accepted. I'm hoping, unless someone has some other better things going, we'll have a room, a roundtable that everyone could. The way I like to run the roundtables is everyone contributes, so it's kind of an open forum. Or a learning session that we have. So hopefully we'll have that. But if you have some ideas, again, I'll put it in the notes. You go to brownfieldsconference.org, and it'll allow you to submit your abstract for next year for the Brownfields. And you could also put that on your calendar way in advance. But it's a excellent meeting and really a good thing to attend. Assessment, and I'm trying to go through this fast because I want to get this Zell in. The assessment and cleanup grants are out for review. And the way OSWER, Off-Solid Waste Emergency Response, works is they it's almost like a wave. They the first thing they do is they send out RFPs, requests for proposals for assessment and cleanup grants. And these are the people in your community who are going to be doing the cleanups. And those are due December 19th. They're out now. And they already had their Adobe webcast, and they went through, and their RFP is out. And I'll put a, let you know how you could access it. It's not something you – what the reason I'm mentioning it is that we're trying to link the job training programs closer to the assessment and cleanup grants. And the idea being, if we could get the job training grants written into the intents of the assessment and cleanup grants when it's time to do cleanup, and even be on their advisory committees, and those of you who are thinking of this strategy may try to find out who in your community is submitting a cleanup grant and or an assessment grant. And if they are, try to see if you can get not only as a partner but on their advisory committee. Then when if you get the grant, you could then link with them with your graduates, and you'll be able to have access to know who the contractors are. You'll be on the inner circle of who's doing the cleanup in the city. Now, the other advantage of that is that when you submit your grant to EPA, you could say you're already linked to the, and we'll be talking about this in the next cycle, you want to be able to demonstrate that you're linked to the cleanup and assessment people, and that'll really give you additional points in terms of the way EPA looks at your grant, because you're already linked in to the people that are doing the work. So the reason I did want to mention that. So I'm going to put some other things in post-session notes, but I really want to get to CivicsWorks. CivicsWorks is an awesome program. We've talked about rural programs in the last couple of sessions. We've talked about ultra-rural in Alaska and Nevada and tribal, where the target area is way spread out, and people are few and far between, and recruitment is difficult. Placement is difficult. There's a huge disparity in the participants. They're the toughest job training programs we have. Then we have the more dispersed or small communities, and they're a little easier. They're usually larger areas, but there is a fairly good selection of people. And then we have the urban people, like Baltimore, like Chicago, like San Francisco, L.A. They each have their own problems. The urban brownfields job training programs have a problem in that they've got lots of people, high concentrations of people, and it's an issue of screening and serving the community and rationing the limited seats. You might have 20 seats in a cycle, and you've got to ration, and you might have 300 people that want to get your training. So they have almost the opposite problem of the rural and the tribal. They also they have really good opportunities for placement, but they have to approach that in a certain way. So one of the things that we're going to be – CivicsWorks is one of those urban types of job training, job development programs. The other thing I really like about what CivicsWorks does, and if those of you who are planning and you're in the beginning stages of developing your programs and partners, they have got a critical mass. They have put together a team of people doing synergistic things, and I love their – I just really like their logo and their byline, which is job training, education, skills development, and community service. And what they're doing is they're combining the talents of Youth Build. They're using AmeriCorps. They're doing skills training. They're doing job training. And they're servicing the community. They're doing urban gardening. These are all under various programs. But what they've been able to do is bring in the EPA program and place it next to these other programs to make the whole system much better and stronger. And I've probably said too much, Giselle, and with that, could you tell us about your program?
Sure. So thank you so much for inviting me to speak about our program. And absolutely, I mean, Mike, you are right on as it relates to civic work. We do have a lot of different programs, including Youth Builds, Urban Farming, AmeriCorps. The program that I'm going to be speaking of today is the Be More Green program, which is the actual program that EPA has funded, and we've been training in the brownfields remediation sector for over a decade now, and have been grantee from EPA for several years. And so I'll be talking about our approach and best practices that we've learned over the years that has made the program and our trainees and participants successful. So with Be More Green, we see the program as two approaches that happen simultaneously. The first one is that we are always employer-driven. I'm not sure how many grantees are current grantees or how many people in the call are participating and they're interested in applying to the EPA, but I think the first and foremost step is to understand what the market looks like in your region or in your city or in your area, because that is important. What we don't want to do is to have trained lots of individuals within the grant cycle and not have full-time and sustainable jobs, living wage jobs for them at the end of the program. And so so that's, for me, that is the first step, and that's partly what has made our program successful. Our curriculum is based on the employers in the area. And so what that looks like essentially is we are in constant communication with our employers, and we ask them feedback on the curriculum. We ask them information about what type of certifications that they find that is useful in their company. So what are the actual needs? By their needs, that means the technical experience, that includes the state and federal certifications, but that also includes the professional development that they want their workers to have. The other portion that we look at is there an actual pathway or career pathway within that particular job sector? And so is it a case where we are training individuals in entry level with the hope that they will then a year from now or 2 years from now transition to a higher paying level job? Or is it the case that we're just training them to do entry level work? So those are the things that we assess right before we actually apply for any grants. We want to make sure that there's jobs at the end, and we want to make sure what that market analysis looks like, and also marrying that with talking to the actual employers and asking them what their actual needs are. Then what we see, how we see the organization and how we see our program is that we have to be extremely thorough as it relates to the recruitment and the screening process of our candidates. Because at the end of it, we want to make sure that the participants who are enrolled in the training program are actually will actually follow through and will actually work out as it relates to them being placed in full-time job opportunities. Similarly, it's important for us that the participants who are graduating from the program are that of a good caliber so that the employers always reach back to us whenever they have hiring needs. So that's extremely important for us. Our recruitment process and our screening is very extensive. We always have every week or every Tuesday, there's an information and application session in which individuals are able to hear about the program, watch a presentation, and understand what the program really is about, as well as the expectations of the program. If they're interested, then they're able to apply at that time. If they meet the requirements, then they will get an interview, a first interview with a staff, and depending how that goes, then we'll do the other assessments. So we'll do the drug test, we may run background checks, we may do other checks as it relates to the process. If they pass all of those things, then they will get a second interview with the whole staff, the training staff, so it's more like a panel interview. And within that panel, there's the the training team. So that includes there's a case manager there, there's a placement specialist there, there's myself, who's part of that panel, and also our training coordinator. And so four of us are actually asking the participant or the candidate specific questions relating to the actual our job roles and responsibilities. So that's one of the strategies that we use. The other strategies that we've used and that I think is very important to our program is to be able to provide supportive services to our program participants. And so that includes being able to leverage additional funding, whether it be from private foundations, to be able to cover other things that EPA doesn't cover. So, for instance, professional and personal development courses that happens the first week of the class, and also job readiness courses, and also some of the follow-up services and the case management services that we offer here. Participants who are actually accepted in the training program, we only have 20 slots per cohort, and so typically we'll start anywhere from 100 to 120 individuals, and we are then narrowing them down to 20 throughout that whole screening and recruitment process. Once they are accepted in the program, what happens is the case management happens immediately, and that happens before even the first day of class. So they get their acceptance letter, and they meet with the case manager to identify the actual case management issues that may come up that will cause them to not successfully complete the program or successfully gain employment or successfully not be able to successfully maintain the job. So those are the three factors that we look at. Are there transportation issues? Are there legal issues that they have to meet with their parole and probation officers? I mean, what does that actually look like? Okay, housing issues, food issues, what does that look like and what type of services can we provide them? If there are services that we are unable to provide them here in-house, what happens is we work with other community-based organizations here in Baltimore so that they can get those services, and by the first week of class, they would have had a plan already in terms of how to address that particular issue. Then they start the class. So after they start the class, upon graduation from the training program, what happens is that we meet with them on a month-to-month basis. So every month, a graduate is expected to either do a phone call or to meet in person, if they're able to meet in person with our case manager. And that case manager is then responsible for tracking their progress as it relates to the issues that they had coming through the program to make sure that those issues have been addressed. And that's important for us because while some individuals, they don't have an issue getting to and from the training center, they may have an issue getting to and from their house to the job. And so we try to help them as much as we can and able to support them in every way that we can so that they are able to be successful, not just to get our numbers, but really be able to be successful as it relates to them getting a career in the industry. That's our goal. It's not just we're getting our numbers and we're placing them in entry level. We see the entry level as a necessity because of some of the barriers. However, our overall goal here in the program and the way we look at it is that, by the first year or the second year, there's an upward career pathway for a graduate in the program, whether they're transitioning from an entry level to a crew leader, to an auditor, or to a site assessment individual. So all of those kind of factors and all of those jobs that are available within the company and within the industry. And so what happens is 2 years after they graduate, we still track them. We track them on a month-to-month basis. And so the follow-up services will happen through case management. But in addition to that, we also are able to provide follow-up services specifically relating to the placement side. So in the placement side, for instance, our placement specialist is then responsible for contacting the program graduate on a monthly basis to see how the job is going. Is it something that they enjoy? I mean, how's the performance? Is they getting there on time? Similarly, they also, the placement specialist is also responsible for contacting their supervisors. And so that's part of the reason why we've been able to build rapport with employers, because we don't just contact them whenever we need to graduate, whenever we need to place our graduates. We engage them throughout the whole process. And so we contact them on a month-to-month basis if they've heard from us. Whether or not the graduate has been successful in the job or has not been, or there are issues, or they've been promoted, I mean, all of those things. In addition to that, we also provide that service through case management should there be an issue that will hinder them from being able to maintain employment. In addition to that, also, one of the employer-driven tactics that we've been able to use is to engage employers, like I said, in the curriculum, taking a look at the curriculum, but also engaging them in a way that they're also part of our advisory board committee. And I think that is extremely important, because they have a lot of things to offer to the table, and we don't just see them as employers. We also need to understand what their needs are, and sometimes through those advisory committees, in terms of how the curriculum is, in terms of how the program is, what we're lacking, what we're missing, what we need to add, or what doesn't work, or what we thought worked 10 years ago but doesn't apply anymore. So those are the forums that we're able to have those conversations. So overall, I would say that those are the two strategies that we've used. It's important that both strategies happen simultaneously because for the employer side, like I said earlier, it's important that there is jobs available at the end of the program for all of the participants, or the successful and graduating participants. At the same token, there also needs to be the supportive services to make sure that those participants are able to maintain employment as a result of graduating from the program. So does anybody have any specific questions for me? I know that that was kind of like a brief introduction to our program, but I'd be happy to answer any questions and help anyone with their proposal or any questions they may have.
I have a question. This is Christine Campbell from Clover Park Technical College out in Tacoma, Washington. Mm-hmm. So I really like your idea of having a placement specialist, tracking them on placement and helping with any barriers they may have to succeeding in their job. But obviously our grant doesn't fund paying for that person, so I'm curious, what funds are you leveraging to do that?
Sure. So we've been able to use additional private foundation. So we have, in addition to getting support, obviously, from EPA, we actually also receive funds from private foundations. And I think that is an important component to the success of the EPA program that we run here at the center, because like I mentioned before, those supportive services is crucial to the participant's progress and being able to maintain the job. So if there are additional, I don't know what foundations are in Tacoma, Washington, but I would encourage you to take a look at them and to see what, you know, to understand philanthropy side of things and see if any of them would fund a placement specialist or just positions to be able to support the program and what you guys are currently doing.
Okay,
Zelle, do you work with the WIB, or do you find you're big enough that you don't need the Workforce Investment Board? Now, they out in Tacoma, they work very closely with the Workforce Investment Board, and y'all have been very successful in qualifying people for supplies, training boots, and you've done a really good job out in Tacoma with the WIB. Are you using WIB resources at all in Baltimore, or don't you need them?
We don't use them for funding per se, but what we do is we participate. We're part of the group, basically. So we're there meetings, and we're there to provide any kind of assistance that they are looking for as it relates to workforce development. But in terms of engaging them as you know, funders or employers. We have not in the past.
I was really impressed, and you may want to go to their website. You just go to CivicWorks. It's .com, though. And they talk about all their programs. But you will see in their program the emphasis on volunteerism and on philanthropy and on volunteers. And you work very closely with AmeriCorps. They were talking about thousands of AmeriCorps workers with you. Have you engaged AmeriCorps in your program at all, or is it some of the other programs?
It's mostly in the other programs. We have engaged AmeriCorps programs in one of our other career pathways here in the weatherization program. In addition to the brownfield remediation courses that we offer here, we also offer a job training in weatherization in the weatherization energy efficiency industry. And so in those cases, we have actually used some AmeriCorps slots, particularly because the length is longer. And so with the brownfield course, it's the training itself is 4.5 weeks, whereas in the weatherization side, it's about 3 months. And so there's a longer time in which folks can fulfill their AmeriCorps service in terms of the hours.
And those are day classes, 8 to 5 or something like that?
Yes,
4.5 weeks.
Correct.
There's another issue for those of you planning, and we'll be talking about this in future PLCs. Do you do night and evening? Do you do day? Do you do concentrated or do you do spread out? And you've chosen that the best route for you is concentrated daytime training.
Correct.
That's it, correct.
And so particularly because the individuals, the population that we serve are mainly underserved and unemployed in Baltimore, so they don't have full-time jobs, for instance, or they don't have a job at all or haven't had a job in a long time. So that's our target population as it relates to the Bradfield Initiative. And so therefore, we have the classes, the courses during the day. However, we have received additional funding not relating to brownfields, but as it relates to weatherization, where we are able to train incumbent workers. And in those cases, that's only in the weatherization side. And in those cases, we actually host the courses on 2 days, 2 days in the week, but that's night courses, and also on Saturday, because those individuals are currently working in weatherization, and so we have to accommodate their schedule.
Excellent. And you know they have an excellent placement record of somewhere around 90%. I think that case management that you're doing is very kind of unique, and not a lot of people are doing it. It's excellent if you can figure out the resources to do it. And I think that's a really good point is most of our grantees just don't have those resources. They could put some dollars into the placement activity, but the case management, it would have to be funded outside of the EPA grant, and that's a real challenge.
Mm-hmm.
So that's congratulations on being able to do that.
Thank you.
Anyone have any questions? We try to keep these at 30 minutes. I know they're always too short, and we'll put as much of this in the post-session notes, and I hope it's okay, Giselle, if I'll put your contact information in there, and if someone wants to talk to you about how you're doing the case management and tracking, which is excellent, is it okay if they email you or call you?
Sure, absolutely, or call me, whichever one is easier for folks to do.
I'll put that in the notes. And again, anyone who, if you didn't get post-session notes or if you got something from the listserv, you could just drop me your contact information, msenew@aol.com. As soon as the RFP comes out, we're going to be sending everyone on our lists notices about that. We're going to be doing one more of this cycle of calls, and then we're going to start focusing also on sustainability and developing these great ideas, like trying to consolidate some of these awesome ideas, things like tryouts as recruitment, using Craigslist for recruitment, getting waivers from students, because if you put your face on Facebook and they're an ex-offender and they've got some issues, you could have some real problems. So we're going to be, you know, in looking at the nuances of day and night classes. Do you spread out? Do you concentrate? Do you do unit day? Do you do night? So those will be the things we're going to be talking about in the future. So anything anyone want to say or contribute or volunteer?
Just like to thank you all. Thank you, Giselle.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thanks, Giselle.
And we have, and also I just wanted to offer also, if anyone needs forms, like Mike, you were saying, with the authorization we have as part of the program, during orientation, we actually require participants. And because we've served individuals with some sort of criminal history in the past, we also are very sensitive about their faces being on anything. In some cases, they would rather not. But we do have those forms available if anybody needs them or would like a copy to use for their program. So that's
thank
also
you.
There.
This came up at the annual conference where, you know, Facebook, Twitter, let's do all these things. And now since the grantees started saying, well, wait a second, let's back off a little bit because we may put some people at risk, so we have to be a little careful. And then, of course, like Giselle said, they do have these forms that they and most of them are kind of like an indemnity form that releases or allows people to use their photos for recruitment purposes.
Mm-hmm. And even, I mean, we also do make, in addition to that, we also make a note in their file. I mean, even when they do fill out the form, if we know that we're going to use them, we always contact them first or even ask if, you know, would you like to be in the video? Would you like to be in the photos? Or we're thinking about posting this, and is that okay? So that's just to take that precaution and just to be sensitive to, you know, to their issues. So.
Are you using Facebook? Do you have a Facebook page? Or?
We do, and so that's, you know, that's obviously where it gets tricky. But yeah, so it's like I said, it's I think it's extremely important because some individuals just don't want their faces or their names out there in
right.
the world. So.
Right. Well, gee, thanks. You always, you know, I learn something every week, and that. Thank you for your presentation, Giselle, and hopefully we'll see you all on the 19th, same time, same phone number.
Thank
and,
you.
Thank
have
you.
A good couple of weeks.
Thank
if
you
have
you.
A chance, tune in to Joe on the 12th.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to you all soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Have a good day. Bye.
Thank you.